either of them to give some small sign of the truth of their relationship. Instead, Ma raises her hand in an awkward wave, the drape of her black shawl exposing her slender forearm, and Pa shuffles into the open mouth of the station as the morning traffic roars down our busy street. Then Ma ducks her head and continues her walk to the local dry cleaners where she works. I sigh and step away from the window. I should be doing something more productive. Why am I still spying on my parents? Because I'm an adult, living at home, and have nothing better to do. If I don't watch out, I'm going to turn into Ma. Timid, dutiful, toiling at a job that pays nothing. And yet, I've caught glimpses of another Ma and Pa over the years. The passion that flickers over her face as she reads Chinese romance novels in the night, the ones Pa scorns. The way Pa reaches for her elbow when he walks behind her, catches himself, and pulls back his hand. I pass by my closet of a bedroom, and the poster that hangs on the wall catches my eye. Barely visible behind the teetering piles of papers and laundry, it's a quote I've always loved from Willa Cather. The heart of another is a dark forest, always, no matter how close it has been to one's own. I'm not sure I believe the sentiment, but her words never fail to unsettle me. Our cramped apartment still smells faintly of the incense Ma burned this morning in front of her mother's altar. Grandma died in Amsterdam a week ago. She lived there with the Tan family, Ma's cousin Helena, Helena's husband Willem, and their son, Lucas, who is 33 years old, the same age as my older sister, Sylvie. I never met Grandma, but Ma's grief has poured over me like a waterfall until my own heart overflows as well. The skin around Ma's eyes is rubbed red and raw. The past few evenings, while Pa hid in their bedroom, I held Ma's hand as she huddled on the sofa, stifling her sobs, attempting to stem the endless stream of tears with an old, crumpled tissue. I wear black today, too, for Ma's sake, while Pa dresses in his normal clothing. It's not that he doesn't care. It's that he can't show us that he does. Sylvie lived with Grandma and Helena's family in the Netherlands for the first 9 years of her life and flew back there a month ago, as soon as she heard Grandma was ill. She's handling a consultancy project for her firm there as well. Dazzling Sylvie, 7 years older than me, yanked from her glamorous life in Europe back to our cabbage-scented apartment in Queens when I was only 2 years old. Often there's a dichotomy between the beautiful sister and the smart one. But in our family, both of those qualities belong to my sister. And me, I am only a shadow, an afterthought, a faltering echo. If I didn't love Sylvie so much, I'd hate her. How did a brilliant creature like Sylvie arise from such mundane stock as our Ma and Pa? Anytime I had a teacher in elementary or high school who'd taught Sylvie, they'd say, "Ah, you're Sylvie Lee's little sister," rife with anticipation. I would then watch as their high hopes turned to bewilderment at my stuttering slowness. This was followed by their disappointment, and finally, their indifference. Sylvie went to Princeton undergrad, earned a master's in chemical engineering from MIT, worked a few years, then went back to school for her MBA from Harvard. Now she's a management consultant, which is a profession I'll never understand, no matter how many times she tries to explain it. Like me, Sylvie adores all sweets, but unlike me, she never gains an ounce. I have watched her eat one egg tart after another without any effect on her elegant hips, as if the sheer intensity of her will burns the calories, consuming everything she touches. She used to have a lazy eye when she was little and wore an eye patch for years. Now, the only imperfection in her lovely face is that her right eye still shifts slightly outward when she's tired.